The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, December 19th, 2008, and this is episode number 158. I am Bob Hayes, your host, here this week to bring you the best in motorcycle road racing news and coverage and all kinds of other good stuff that we always yak on about. So, today's show, we got Darren Carpenter on the phone. Darren Carpenter, if you don't recall, is our buddy that lives up there in Portland, races in the Omer Racing Series, is a track day instructor, a longtime friend of MotoGPOD and a personal friend of mine that I've done a lot of track days with and all that sort of thing. He's a good guy and always enjoyed doing a call with him. It's a little bit of a change up from the calls with Jules. It's just sort of a different dynamic. It's just a little hard to explain. But what we're mostly talking about today is some of the news that came down the pipe this last week, which there was quite a few little news items, and it was kind of interesting stuff. So we talk about some AMA. We talk about a little MotoGP. Of course, we mentioned some track day stuff. There's all kinds of interesting stuff going on with that, and I think that call is a good one. We're going to get to that real super mega quick. Before we get to that, we do have some contest winners to announce. Yay, contest winners! Drum roll, please. If we had a really cool show with sound effects and stuff, I'd put a drum roll in there, but I'm not going to bother. So, let's see. This was the contest that I announced in episode number 156 2 weeks ago. And this contest was to be a winner of one of five of those fantastic MotoGPMatters.com racing calendars for 2009. This is a wall calendar, and it has all of the dates of the riders' birthdays. And I don't have it in front of me, so I'm going from memory here. I believe it has the provisional dates of all of the races for World Superbike and MotoGP as well. I sure hope it does, but I'm going out on a limb. This was published by MotoGP Matters, which is David Emmett. Kropotkin Thinks, an excellent blog, and all the photography was done by Scott Jones, another friend of MotoGPOD, and this is spectacular stuff. It really is. Now, you guys, you can actually purchase this calendar at MotoGPMatters.com. I've plugged this the last couple of shows. I'm going to plug it again because it's that cool. And basically, you've got some fantastic photography there going on. Scott Jones managed to get press credentials and was up there and got some great photography going on at both the Laguna Seca round and the Indy round of 2008 racing season. And I'll tell you what, the way they did this calendar, this is how the official calendar should be. Because I've purchased the official MotoGP calendar before. And, you know, I mean, hey, it's good. Beautiful photography and all of that kind of stuff, you know. Yeah, but I don't know. This calendar is even better. So go to MotoGPMatters.com. On the left side, there's a link for calendar. However, we do have five lucky winners that don't have to buy one, unless they want to buy a second one, maybe for their den or for a gift or what have you. But these five lucky winners are Dan Heffern, drumroll, Richard Woods, Paul Dawson, which that almost makes it sound like the contest is fixed, but it's not, because Paul Dawson is a longtime friend of MotoGPOD living down there in Australia. Kevin McDonald, retired chief living in Japan. So good on you, chief. Congratulations. Got a calendar. And Gabriela Gomez, who says she wanted to win the calendar for her husband, who listens to MotoGPOD regularly. So I thought that one was kind of cool, too. And these are totally random, folks. I do like to think that I have some shred of integrity left and all of that, and I randomized this and picked five emails out of all of the emails that I received. It's a virtual hat. You know, I use an Excel spreadsheet, of course, rather than an actual hat, but whatever. So those are the five random winners. Congratulations, and thank you very much to everybody else that entered the contest. Better luck next time. I do encourage you, go to MotoGPMatters.com and buy one of these calendars. The price is for a single calendar, if I recall correctly, is $22.95 US dollars, and I don't know, something like $19.50 for euros or something along those lines. But check it out, MotoGPMatters.com. They have a deal if you want to get two of them. It'll give you a discount and all of that. It's an absolutely beautiful calendar, and I really do think that it's well worth purchasing one. They make excellent gifts as well. So we will be mailing those calendars out there to you. I'm going to contact Scott Jones. He's going to mail them direct from his secret location in the heart of California, wherever Scott's living at. And good congratulations again. Like I said, Dan Heffern, Richard Woods, Paul Dawson, Kevin McDonald, and Gabriela Gomez. It's always nice to have a woman listener every now and then, you know, shake things up a little bit, because the audience is predominantly male, oddly enough. So moving on. Let's see. Oh, real quick announcement before we get to the call with Darren is that, let's see, this is December 19th. I'm going to not have a show for the next 2 weeks because Christmas and New Year's both fall on Thursdays. Thursday night is the time that I do the show and everything. I've got a lot of stuff going on. My son is coming up from Monterey. He's on leave from his Marine Corps training that he's doing down there. He's learning Russian at the Defense Language Institute down there in Monterey. So he's going to be coming up, and you know, I've got the family thing and all of this and that and the other, blah, blah, blah. You've heard it all before. Excuses, excuses. In any case, there's not going to be a regularly scheduled show until January 9th. However, if things work out, Jules may be putting together a show. So we'll see if that works out or not. We're not 100% sure on that. There may be a show coming up probably right around like Christmas time or Boxing Day for those of you in Europe and Australia and all of that. Somewhere in that range, December 25th, 26th, somewhere like that. We may have a show. We may not. Okay. I don't know yet for certain if Jules is going to do something or not. Other than that, the next regularly scheduled show is January 9th. So we're taking a little break, folks. 2 weeks off, no reruns, nothing like that. Just taking a break. It's kind of nice from my point of view, and I hope you don't mind too much, but I'm sure that you'll understand because, like I said, Christmas, New Year's, all sorts of stuff going on, and we will talk to you again then. So, enough blathering on. Why don't we go ahead and get right into this call with Darren, and here we go. All right, we got Darren on the phone. Darren Carpenter up there in Portland. How are you doing today, Darren?
Doing very good.
Good, good, cool deal.
Trying to survive the storm, the Arctic Blast 2008, I think is the name.
Yeah, it's, I know it, we're getting pretty unusually long time of really, really cold temperatures down here in Roseburg. I don't like this, driving to work when it's 20 degrees and stuff like that. It's kind of weird. So.
Do you still ride your motorcycle when it's 20 degrees?
Are you kidding? No way. It would have the benefit of being dry, it was, you know, because we didn't have like a lot of snow hanging around. It was just freezing cold the past few days. But no, motorcycling pretty much stops being fun at that point for me. So
I didn't ride my motorcycle either, but I did ride my motorcycle for a few days to work in November. I don't have to go very far to work. I only have to go about 5 miles, and it's all residential kind of. Like 35 mile an hour speed limit the whole way, so it's really not that big of a deal. But on one of the days, I think every day I rode in November, it rained, and you know, I'm riding my race bike, my RC51. I've got the, you know, N-Tech Dunlop, you know, DOT racing tires on, and so I'm driving home one day and it's cold and rainy, and I'm not doing anything stupid. I'm just trying to get home safe. I'm in traffic, and I'm giving it a little bit of gas, and pretty soon the back end starts coming around the front. I'm like, oh, my goodness. I'm doing like 25 miles an hour, and I can hardly get on the throttle without spinning out. So it took it very easy.
Yes, and I'm sorry. It stops being fun at that point, and I don't, you know, I'm like in the position where it's like especially now that gas prices have plunged back down to low amounts that we haven't seen for a long time. It's kind of like, you know, I'm just going to drive. I'm a wuss. I'm a fair weather rider. I admit it, freely admit it.
Yeah, I'm the same way for the most part.
So in any event, in the world of motorcycle racing and stuff, actually, maybe we should touch on, because I wanted to touch real quick on an email that we got, because we always talk about track days. You're kind of our track day specialist, being an instructor up there with Pisser and all of that. Why don't we, since you just talked about riding your track day tire equipped motorcycle in the rain, let's touch on the email that we got from Kirby Jackson, because I don't think we've mentioned these sort of specifics about track days. And real quick, let's see, Kirby had a couple of quick questions about track days. He's been riding for a few years, wants to start doing track days, but he says, the only major technical hurdle I have is removing the coolant and replacing it with water. I can easily do this. I was just wondering what effect it will have on the motorcycle if I ride it from my house to the track. And then he said, it's probably a dumb question since I will be tearing it up on the track, so a cruise down the road should not affect it, correct? And then his second question, he says, if riding to the track day is a dumb idea, what's a better way? And then we cover, you know, borrowing a pickup from U-Haul or trailer hitch or whatever. So basically those questions real quick. What are your views on antifreeze versus water and all of that? And why would you replace it and so on and so forth?
Yeah, so the antifreeze, you don't want to have that in your bike when you go to the racetrack just because it's hard to clean up. If you crash and spill that stuff on the track, it's you know just as bad as oil, so they're trying to get that off the surface. They don't want you to use that. They want you just to use distilled water, and you can get something called water wetter, and then you can also get something called engine ice, and they're basically just coolants that don't have, I don't forget the actual chemical name, but they don't have the property that's in antifreeze to keep it from freezing, which also makes it very slippery on the surface. So your bike should run fine. There's no problems at all. You can run just straight distilled water. You can run with those two other products, water wetter and engine ice. The engine ice and water wetter will help keep the engine cooler, you know, when you're running on the street or on the track, but they won't prevent it from freezing. So if you live in an area where it's cold, where, you know, now Bob and myself up here in Portland are having a cold freeze, you want to take that stuff out and put in, you know, just regular antifreeze for the winter. That's actually kind of a good idea anyway, I've heard, because when you put the antifreeze in, it's a lubricant. It helps kind of lubricate the whole system, and it also helps fight corrosion where distilled water and water wetter wouldn't do that. So yeah, I took my bike in October and, you know, drained all the fluids out of it, took out the, I had basically water and water wetter in it, and then replaced it with antifreeze. And then come this April, I'll do the same thing, and I'll take out the antifreeze and put in distilled water and water wetter. And I'll run it that way all year long, street, track, it doesn't make a difference.
Right. Actually, not all track day organizations require you to pull out the antifreeze. In fact, PSSR says antifreeze is okay, and I know the C group and I believe the B group. I think the A group you have to run water or water wetter or what have you, but the other groups, they say that antifreeze is okay. And as far as I heard and understood about the cooling properties and all that, yeah, water may not be as good of a coolant, but it's not that whether the bike will overheat is the big question. It's the freezing thing, which you kind of said. So
yeah.
And the corrosion and all that good stuff. So,
right. His second question was how to get to the track.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know people who ride their motorcycle to the track. Of course, I live in Portland, and we have a racetrack right in the city, so it's, you know, fairly easy to ride the track here. But I know, and I'm sure a lot of other places, people do ride their bike that they're going to ride on the track. They ride it to the track, and then get set up and ready, and they go out. So it's possible to do. But it's not necessarily the preferred thing. And basically, you know, if you're at the track and something bad happens, if you have a spill, you know, that if you don't have a way to get home, you know, but the bike that you just crashed is going to make your day just a lot longer and a lot more of a headache. And, you know, so you want to kind of be prepared for everything. And, you know, if you're prepared for everything and you go to the track, you're going to have a fun time and a good day no matter what happens, you know, within reason. And so, you know, if you can rent a U-Haul, you can get like the 20-foot or 19-foot truck, I think, is like what, $20 a day or something like that. I mean, they're not the best trucks, but, you know, if you don't have to go more than 100 miles, I would think they'd be fine. And you can also, if you have a trailer hitch on your car or on your truck, you can rent a trailer from U-Haul. A friend of mine did that, Fergus. We've mentioned him a few times on the show. He did that, I think, all last year. He had a trailer hitch put on his station wagon, and then he would just rent a U-Haul trailer, I think, I don't know if it's like $10 a day, you know, even, and he would just take the bike to the track on that. So it worked out well for him. I would think that would be better to do, because you can also take more things to the track. You can take maybe extra gas to the track. You can take your tools to the track. You can take a chair so you can sit down. You know, if you're riding your motorcycle there, you're just not going to have very much stuff with you, and so it just makes it for a better day. I mean, it is a long day. That, you know, I know when I go up to the track day, I'm at the track between 7 and 7:30, and I'm not the first person there. There's people that just show up about between 7 and 7:30, you're going to get your pit set up, and the track goes hot at 9 o'clock, and you're running until 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock. That's a long day, so you know you're going to be tired at the end of the day, and you want to be able to you know take refreshments and water and stuff like that during the day, and the motorcycle just makes it a little bit tougher.
I agree 100%. I mean, yeah, you can, and you do see people that ride at the track. Jules has ridden to track days in the past that we've done with him. But yeah, I like, again, a fair weather rider, and it kind of boils down to the same thing. If all else fails, like you mentioned, the ability to bring along more stuff, it does. Otherwise, you know, you're pretty much, you've got to wear all your leathers and everything on the bike, and you don't have, it might be harder to have like a change of clothes for lunchtime, because on a hot day, getting out of those leathers at lunch is a big, it's a nice break. and that kind of thing. We always bring the quick shade, those canopies, because in Portland, we don't have a covered pit area that for the track days, so those are nice to have for shade, and all of that kind of stuff is very, very difficult if you're actually on the motorcycle. So I would say that it's well worth, maybe a trailer or whatever. I'm lucky enough to have a pickup, as do you. And, we just load the motorcycle in the pickup truck and take it on down to the track. But and then I've said this one before, but the fact that I bought a bike specifically for track days, now that I've kind of sort of started getting a little more into them and doing it a bit more, even though it's a fairly big expense for something that in my case is pretty much a toy, I like that. It's a big like weight off of my mind that, you know, that I have a track bike and it's not my regular street bike and all of that. Plus I actually enjoy riding the SV on the track more. It's a little easier to wrestle it around and just sort of seems more suited for the style of track day riding that I tend to do, which is not, necessarily always. It's like, I've done the straight line, I'm going to go as fast as I possibly can, and oh, wow, this is great. The SV doesn't even go anything like that fast, but I can carry a lot more corner speed, and we've talked endlessly about that. But that's where I stand on that one. So
yeah, and I mean, you're right. I mean, having a track day bike, it is an expense. It is a hobby, a recreation. We go out there, and it is kind of a toy. But just for all the listeners out there, you you have the bike. You can sell it later. You can get some money back. The way I kind of look at it, all the bikes I've gone through, buying and selling them, buy them used, race them for a few years, and then sell them used. It comes out to like maybe hundreds of dollars a year that you kind of have to spend on the depreciation value of the bike. But I don't take care of my bikes as well as I should, so
but yeah, and though yeah, actually, and when you put it in those kind of terms, that yeah, you still have the resale value of it. Yeah, you're right. And I think it seems like a track prepped motorcycle is it kind of tends to reach a certain level of value and sort of stay there. Unless you've, destroyed it. But, if it's still in relatively the same condition, I'm pretty confident I could get more or less pretty much what I paid for my SV. I could probably sell it for that. Might take a little while. Might have to find the right guy and all of that. So it's not something, where I can count on some ready cash in 3 hours or something. But, I agree that that
would. Well, how much do you mind me asking how much you paid for your SV?
It was, if I recall correctly, I think it was $3,000 even, or was it maybe like $3,200? It was right around there, $3,000 to $3,200. I can't remember exactly. Wow.
That SV is pretty much a clean, straight, just SV, prepped for the track. I've seen it before, and yeah, you could easily get that. I know guys who are looking for an SV this year, and I talked to somebody who was selling his SV for like $5,500, and it was just basically a clean, straight, track SV. So yeah, they kind of get to a point where they just don't depreciate that much more. I mean, if you think about motorcycles compared to, say, a car, they're just so much cheaper. I mean, when you consider, like, you can go to the factory, to the showroom and get the top line Suzuki GXR, GSXR 1000. It's their top line sport bike. You can get it for like $10,000, and it'll outperform almost every car on the road. Where a car, you go to the dealership, you're paying $50,000 for a minimum for an exotic sports car. And so since they're just so much cheaper, you get them new, you prep them for the track, you do whatever, you're going to do to them. A few years later, they're not going to be worthless. They're still going to be worth a few thousand dollars. And, like in your situation, you've got that SV. I know when I was shopping around for when I bought the SV, and you just see bikes that are like, they're 2000 or they're 99 or they're 98. But they've had some stuff done to them. They're still in good shape. They still have a decent motor. They're just not going to sell for less than, say, $3,000, $2,500 maybe.
Yeah, that's what it seemed to me like. You can get into, I think, a track day bike on a real shoestring budget if you're prepared to do a lot of work yourself. you know, if you go and buy a salvage bike and manage to get lucky and pretty much steal it, you know, where this bike's been wrapped around a tree, then though, but you have that much more work to get it in track ready prep. And also it's still going to, you're going to have to spend money on it. So it's going to add up. It's not like you can just run out and spend, I don't know, whatever, $800 and have a track bike. Typically, I guess, at least that's sort of what I found when I was looking around for it. I had to somewhat adjust my thing, cause I was hoping to get away with a super budget bike around the like $2,000 range. And I had a bit of a reality check fairly quickly and had to sort of, adjust my sights there a little bit and step up to the plate, but I don't regret it. It's a good thing. And, you know, like I said, even though it is a toy, there's a lot of things that are expensive that are just simply toys. Dirt bikes, boats for, you know, ski boats. People have ski boats and they spend a lot of money on their ski boats. And, you know, these things are, you know, in effect toys. So, you know, if you're not going to spend any money on that, what are you going to spend it on? Right.
Right. Drugs.
So, yeah.
Drugs and alcohol.
Exactly. That's what I'm going to spend it on. But, so, all right. So thanks very much, Kirby. There's a couple of questions about some of the track day stuff that I don't think we have covered. We've talked a lot about track days and it's always fun to talk about track days, but, I don't think we did mention those couple of things. And I would boiling down to one last piece of advice there is I would try to not ride to the track day. That's just me. It's just, it's like insurance, you know. You never ever want to use it, but when you have it, it's kind of a good thing. And who knows, maybe it brings you good karma that if you do have it, you don't need it, you know, whereas if you don't have it, then you need it. So if you end up riding that motorcycle to the track, then you end up, you know, crashing and now you're stuck. You got no ride. Plus you have a broken motorcycle. You have to get home and it's just very, very inconvenient.
You know, and I just wanted to comment and say that, you know, if your listeners out there have questions about track days, feel free to send them into Bob. And, you know, I know when we got these two and Bob sent it to me, I was like, I think we've talked about this before. And I know when I first read the questions, they seem kind of basic, but you know, it's just a matter of the fact that we've done track days for a while now. And so it's easy to forget what it's like the first time you go to the track where everything is new. And yeah, so if your listeners have any questions, feel free to send them in. We can talk about it on the podcast.
Right. Exactly. Always. It's always good to have topics to, you know, gives us stuff to talk about. And again, that's another brings up the little piece of advice is that every club in every region of the country, you know, every track has their regulars at the track and they do the track days. And somewhere or other, these guys have a forum, a website, a chat room, whatever it is, I guarantee it. And, you know, out here on the West Coast, the PSSR seems to be sportbikes.ws is one of the very, very popular ones for the regional stuff. You know, there's a lot of guys there. And if you go on there and you put up a post that says, hey, I want to get into track days, you'll get all kinds of advice. You might make some friends. You might find yourself with like a mentor, which is a great thing to have on your first track day. You know, all sorts of stuff. And they're out there. People like to share their hobbies and stuff. So, okay. Want to talk a little bit about what's some of the stuff that happened in the news? It's actually been the past, I don't know, what about a week or so maybe, that it seemed like there's been a few things that kind of popped up in the news.
Talk about Honda first? Honda,
yeah.
Born out of everything, seems like.
Yeah, I agree. And I mentioned it on the last week's show that they pulled out of Formula One, which was a sudden decision and fairly catastrophic, I think, for Formula One fans. But yeah, not long after that, a couple of days later, it was actually December 12th, American Honda announced today that it will withdraw Team Honda from participation in the 2009 AMA Road Racing Series. And that's, I don't know. I can't say that I'm altogether surprised given the state of AMA with the whole, you know, 12 different kinds of superbike and rules that, as far as I know, have still not been 100% completely finalized. And just this sort of mishmash that they've got going on. I'm not really super surprised that, that the factory Honda racing team has basically said, you know, we're not coming back.
Right. And, you know, Honda will, there will still be Hondas racing on the track. There's some satellite teams, I guess you can call them, was it the Corona Honda team? And then there's also, the
Arian Racing. Yeah.
Arian Racing. So they'll be racing Hondas, and I'm assuming that Honda's going to give them support. I mean, they'll probably give them free bikes to race at the minimum. And, So there'll be Hondas on the track, but yeah, there's not going to be a factory team. And you know, I kind of agree. If it wasn't for the shuffle around with the AMA, you know, being bought by the Daytona Motor Group and the rule changes and all this stuff that's going on, you know, if that wasn't happening, I'd be more surprised. But I'm still a little surprised just because, you know, the U.S., that's a big market. They sell a lot of motorcycles here, and for them not to have a factory team, you know, it doesn't cost that much for, I can't imagine the AMA team, you know, even being a fraction of their MotoGP team, which is a fraction of their Formula One team, you know, and so I was a little surprised, but, you know, it's strange times we live in now.
Right, right. Well, I mean, they're, you know, Honda, the gigantic corporation, Jim Race was kind enough to send us some numbers, an article that he found, but Honda overall worldwide is just hemorrhaging money, in effect, because of this whole gigantic financial meltdown thing. You know, I mean, they're still selling billions of dollars worth of cars, motorcycles, generators, you know, all the things that Honda does, but you know, their sales are way, way down compared to last year, and that means that they have to start somewhere saving some money. You know, when you're talking about posting a multi-billion dollar loss over 6 months, you know, $2.1 billion in the 6 months through March 2009 is what they're expecting. And that's kind of increased from their previous estimate of what was going to happen. So to avert more red ink, Honda is undertaking a series of measures aimed at cutting costs. And, you know, so they're doing all sorts of things. And unfortunately, you know, AMA is one of the things. And you're right. And realistically, they're probably not saving a lot of money in the grand scheme of things. When you're talking about $2.1 billion with a B, you know, I mean, yeah, they're relatively mild investment in the AMA series. But I guess, you know, it all sort of adds up.
Well, I don't even know if it's so much of it that it adds up, but I think, you know, like you say, they're losing a lot of money. There's a whole world economy right now that's going down the tubes, it seems like. And so a lot of companies are thinking, wait a minute, we need to get ourselves in a good position. And so I wouldn't even be surprised. You know, the first thing that kind of goes, gets the budget cuts is research and development. And, you know, and then obviously the racing programs for the AMA, they're, you know, like that's not really going to help their business that much. It's probably seen as like not even that productive because they're not winning the races in the AMA. So, you know, it's like, what are we getting out of this? And, you know, we're putting some money in. It's probably just a little bit, but at least they can cut something and then go back to their investors and their board and say, look, we're making cuts. We're doing things to, you know, bring in the budget and reduce our cost and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, like I say, they cut out their Formula One team, which was an expensive, I think they said like $500 million a year they spent on that. That's huge.
Right.
That's a half of a billion, a half of one of those Bs. I kind of think like, you know, a lot of the things they're going to do, if they're going to cut them, it's almost more for just show, you know, because they're not really saving that much money. At least I don't think so.
Right, in the grand scheme of things. I mean, realistically, some of the estimates that were running around were that possibly Honda spending like, you know, $50 million in MotoGP is like a tenth of their Formula One, and I'm not sure actually where I saw that guesstimate. It might be, you know, just completely out there. But if that's even a ballparky thing, then you figure for the AMA, I mean, yeah, it's probably, I don't know. I mean, you know, $10 million, something like, I really have no idea. I'm just guessing here. But it is, you know, it is some money. Maybe it is symbolic. Maybe it's something where they can say to the shareholders, look, you know, we're tightening our belts and this and that. And Honda's done this before. They pulled out of Grand Prix racing way back when. I read that too not too long ago. It was like, you know, a long time ago, like
1970s or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, exactly. And whether or not this is a good idea, especially a company, you know, Honda was somewhat founded with a racing heritage. You know, they've always been somewhat racing focused, and you lose a lot of ground. You know, if you disappear from the scene for several years, it's not like you can just come back and pick up exactly where you left off. You know, you're almost having to rebuild from ground zero, sort of a thing. And that's what they found in Grand Prix racing. You know, at the time, the the 500cc championship. And I think that, you know, that may or may not be true in AMA, because AMA, there are similar series in other countries, and plus you got World Superbikes and all of that, but there's still a lot of like infrastructure and staff and people and knowledge and things like that that are, you know, they're gone now, right? And so unless they manage to keep those people and shuffle them around somewhere, and then, okay, we're going to come back to AMA in, you know, however many years, all of a sudden bring them back, but I don't see that happening. So, and not to mention the riders, you know, it's not really good there. Although Zemke was already gone. Who had they signed? Who were they talking about racing in 2009 in AMA? Do you remember?
Well, it's got to hurt for DeHommel. DeHommel's been an American Honda guy for I don't know how long, and he's not going to get signed by another team.
No, I agree.
Like 52 years old, I think.
Yeah, so, you know, it is. That's not a real, real good thing, but...
Well, I mean, and let's mention there was an article in some magazine that talked about Honda possibly pulling out of MotoGP, and I guess there's an announcement coming up this Friday, which I guess would be today for the listeners. But you know, I don't know how true that is either. I guess we'll have to see. It was kind of surprising that they would announce or even that that would come out. I kind of was thinking maybe it was just the Spanish papers trying to get or Italian papers trying to get more you know, papers sold, but. You know, can you imagine that if Honda pulled out of MotoGP?
Right. That'd be disastrous. And that was kind of condensed on the MotoGP Matters sites where we saw it, that talking about that they might pull out of MotoGP. But you've got a manufacturer that's providing, what, 6 of the 19 motorcycles? Am I right? Yeah. And, you know, so that reduces us to less than 15, which, according to the FIM regulations, it's no longer... You know, a world championship series when you don't have 15 bikes on the grid, and
yeah,
it's and that's assuming that Honda pulled completely out. You know, if they only pulled out the factory effort, which is, you know, the Repsol Honda team, that it would still be a disaster because you know, I don't know, they're such a big part of you know, they're one of the big players, they really are, and.
They're the biggest player in MotoGP. Like you say, all the other teams, Suzuki provides 2 bikes, Kawasaki provides 2 bikes, Yamaha gets in 4. Do they have 5?
5 Ducatis next year, right.
5 Ducatis next year. So, you know, Honda's, you know, it's big Honda. They're the evil empire. That's the one that everybody roots against. I mean, if they were to pull out, it would really just fall apart. And even if they just said, okay, look, we're going to... You know, we'll supply bikes for Repsol, but we're not going to do any development work. That would also be a big thing because, you know, those bikes get developed all the way through the year. And if they just said, basically, here's the bike, we're going to stop development as of January 1st, and you can race it if you want, that would also be a huge impact.
Oh, yeah, sure, because, you know, they're going to get left behind. Everybody else is going to continue their development efforts. And you know, I mean, this is what happened in the 250 series on the Hondas. You know, Honda effectively stopped developing that motorcycle, what, like 3 years ago?
And I thought so, even further back.
Was it? Yeah, exactly. And so it stagnates, and they get passed by the competition. So, no, we don't want to see that. And the Jim Race, again, like I said, in that email that he sent us, did you get that one? I think you were on that one. And he did say that, you know, it looks like we might be safe, you know, that MotoGP was not mentioned, and that we can all breathe easier. And he quoted a reference from Business Week, interestingly enough, talking about this. So I guess we'll know for sure later, you know, today, Friday. But it's something a little bit worrisome, I suppose.
Yeah, and like I said, when I first read it, I was just like, my first thought was, no way. There's no way they're going to pull out. But then my mind just kind of started thinking, you know, there's a lot of things that have happened in the last 3 months that I would have never have thought would have happened. And so I guess I wouldn't be completely surprised if they pulled out. And so then my mind started wondering just what would the world be like if Honda was not in MotoGP?
Yes, this weird, bizarre universe of what happens to MotoGP. And you're right. I agree. there's so much politics in the whole thing that goes on and at so many different levels. You know, I mean, you know that Dorna is going to do everything they can to prevent that from happening. I would think that Repsol, who picks up most of the bill for the whole factory Honda effort, is also, you know, would be not real happy about seeing that go away. Although Repsol did in the 250 series, when it became apparent that Honda's no longer developing this motorcycle, you know, Repsol got with KTM, which have pulled out of 250s now. So I'm not sure where Repsol's going there. But, you know, this is an important part of Repsol's marketing. And
well, the thing is if they were to pull out, I think at that point you'd almost see a shift away from MotoGP to World Superbike. I think World Superbike kind of got themselves positioned. They're not the biggest, I don't think, as far as a TV market or market share with MotoGP, but they're kind of in a good spot because they're really not driven by the factories. That, you know, the racers have bikes that are, you know, somewhat more equal, I guess, just because they're all based on a production bike, and the production bikes, you know, there's only so much modifications you can do to them. Obviously, the factory teams spend, you know, $500,000 on electronics, and, you know, they do a lot more to the bikes than what you can actually get at the showroom, but still, those bikes don't change as often through the year. They have close racing. There's a full grid. All the factories have a team, it seems like, on the grid, and so, you know, it might be that if Honda were to pull out of MotoGP, that Repsol would be like, well, let's see if we can sponsor a team in the World Superbike.
That's a possibility. Yeah. I mean, on this, from the looking at it from a somewhat Spanish perspective, Repsol being a Spanish company, MotoGP attendance-wise at the races, it's something like, you know, three times the attendance that the World Superbike guys get. But is that, you know, is that always the way it's going to be? No, not necessarily. You know, World Superbike has, you know, they had their own dark days a few years ago where things were looking pretty sketchy. And I think they did a fantastic job of kind of regrouping and sort of somewhat reinventing their series a little bit, maybe, you know, reinvigorating it. There's the word I want. You know, bringing it back to it is, cause it is, it's some good stuff. It really is super good racing. But yeah, you know, you might be right that they would, and that would be, you know, like a couple more nails in the old coffin lid of MotoGP if that were to happen.
Right. And I'm not for that. I'm a fan of MotoGP. I'm a fan of racing. I like watching World Superbike as well as all of them, and MotoGP included. So I'm hoping they're not going to go away, and I hope that Honda doesn't pull the trigger and pull out of that MotoGP. But, yeah, I guess we'll find out today, and we'll talk about it next week. Either you'll talk about it with Jules or actually next week. Is that a holiday week?
Yeah, we're taking at least I was planning on taking a couple weeks off because both Christmas and New Year's fall on the Thursday. So, but we'll talk about it sometime or another.
Yeah.
and we'll have to see what happens. So, yeah. Exactly. All we can do on that is see how the news shapes up and yeah, we'll bring you our opinion and commentary as it happens, or at least, you know, a couple weeks later. talking about World Superbike and MotoGP and the sort of comparisons and contrast between the two series, that kind of leads us into our next, what I think is somewhat of a big story of the past week or so, which is this whole Rossi challenge. You know, Bayless accepts Rossi's challenge. And this is from a story on speed.com, speedtv.com. Promoter's Dream, talking about the duel in the desert. And the reason why I give this article a lot of credence is that it was written by Dennis Noyes, who is probably the best thing that speedtv.com, has going as far as their motorcycle kind of coverage. Because, you know, Dennis Noyes is, I think he's quite frankly a brilliant motorcycle journalist. And this was a super interesting article, which you saw and pointed out to me, about this whole challenge where, you know, reigning world MotoGP champion Valentino Rossi wants to take on the reigning world Superbike champion Troy Courser. Wait a minute.
Troy Bayless.
Yeah, I know. The article says Courser, and as I say that, there's a big typo in Speed's thing. So we'll correct that. Reigning world Superbike champion Troy Bayless in the battle for world road racing bragging rights with Max Biaggi on the new Aprilia RSV4, looking for vengeance and the world's best superbike riders, blah, 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 all in. You know, be there or be square. That would be spectacular. But it's also, even though this article somewhat makes it sound like this has been brewing and percolating for a couple of months, other than the news that we have heard, you know, where Rossi is sort of praising World Superbikes and saying that it's that they've got the best racing right now, you know, very close, aggressive racing and this and that. Other than that, this is kind of the first I've heard of it, that, you know, he's sort of throwing down the glove, if you will, of, you know, let's get out there on the same equipment, roughly, you know, Yamaha versus Ducati, but still the same series.
Same production base.
Yeah. But I think that would be spectacular.
It would be a great thing to see. But, you know, it was funny when I read that article, I also didn't realize that there was some, you know, kind of competition between, or, you know, rivalry between Rossi and Bayless. You know, we've seen them race in MotoGP at the same time, and, you know, it didn't seem like they were anything but just competitors on the track. I didn't really think there was any kind of big rivalry between the two.
Right.
But I think what's happened is it's just that Bayless has gotten, he's just loved in Italy, and they have written him up a big time, I think, since he won the championship. And I think the Italian press is saying, you know, he's the greatest world superbike rider, and probably even throwing more accolades than that on him as well. And probably that's just kind of gotten to Rossi, and he's just like, you know, hey, you know, it is good racing over there, but I can beat him there too.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. And that was covered in the later on in the article, where Italian readers of Motosprint, which is an Italian weekly, chose Troy Bayless as the winner of the prestigious Golden Helmet Award. So that you think that Valentino Rossi is torqued that he didn't get the Golden Helmet, and he wants to go out and, you know, spank Bayless. I don't know. And it would be a, I, like I said, it's on so many levels, it's so very interesting. Rossi will be riding, you know, in effect, a Yamaha R1. And, well, not in effect, it is a Yamaha R1. And against, you know, Bayless would be coming back out of retirement for this one race, which the article says that Bayless has accepted this. But also, we don't know that it's actually going to happen. It still seems very speculative.
Right. We'll have to see what happens. But, you know, it would be interesting. But the other thing about it is, I'm not necessarily sure either one of them would win the race. You know, with World Superbike, there's at least five guys that could win the race, you know, every race. So
exactly.
I think it's a much tougher challenge. And even if Bayless were to come back and take on the field minus Rossi, I'm not sure Bayless would win.
Right, right. That's a good point. And, yeah, exactly. We're both, you know, the article's clicking along, and even I'm kind of assuming that, you know, it's a battle between these two guys. But no, there's another, you know, what's the grid size in World Superbikes? It's 30-ish, you know. So there's a whole bunch of other guys that are also going to be trying to win this, including, you know, Haga is going over to Ducati this year. We've got Ben Spies, all kinds
right,
of
Ben
stuff.
Ben Spies on the Yamaha, and you've got Max Biaggi on the new Aprilia, and you've got, you know, it just goes down the list. I would love to see Rossi go and do the whole season at World Superbike, just because I think the racing over there is incredible. That won't happen, but just even see him in one race would be fun.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, kind of, you know, both of them come in as a wild card and see it. So, I'm going to be watching out for more news on this front, because that's, February 14th is the Qatar, is that the opening round? Negative.
Yes.
That's I guess it would be a special one-off preseason race at LaSalle there, wouldn't it? Because their opening round for World Superbikes is in March at Phillip Island. So, yeah, I read this article. I actually read this article twice, and there's still gaps.
They got the name Courser and Bayless confused. Maybe
yeah,
they got
that, that's confused. I read it twice and didn't even notice that until I read it out loud. but so it's a little strange, you know. It's whatever, and interesting. So it's an exhibition race. It's a one off. It's a test date that turns into a race. Whatever, it would be. Just super interesting, to say the least.
Would you, If you had to bet on one or the other, who would you bet on?
Wow. You know, okay, assuming that you know, the Bayless is coming back and racing, you know, it would be a Bayless come back on a Ducati. Rossi comes back on an R1 or goes two on an R1 and this and that. I'd go with Bayless, to be honest with you. I really would, because I think the experience on the Ducati, Bayless is better sort of overall luck at Qatar, which I wouldn't put in as one of Rossi's favorite tracks. All of that, I would say that in that race, I would go with Bayless. What about you?
You know, I think it'd almost be a toss-up. My preference of the two riders, I like Troy Bayless. I think he's a great guy. I'm a fan of both of them, but I'm more of a fan of Troy Bayless, so I probably would go with that. But I think Rossi, he's good on any kind of bike, and I think he's a good challenge to anybody because he's not the kind of guy that, you know, he can just blow out the race. But I would have think that in this race, you know, because he'd be on Pirelli tires, it'd be a new tire, it'd be a new bike. For him to win, I think he would just go out and follow those guys around for the first half of the race until he kind of got the feel of the bike and he learns, you know, the track and the bike in that time period, and he can easily win it. He's done that a million times, it seems like. But I think I'd be rooting for Troy Bayless, and you know, but I would like to see it, definitely.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, all, you know, those things aside, that overall, you know, Rossi is seriously the greatest of all time. And you know, Bayless might be, you know, the greatest world superbike guy. You know, he got the championship last year, right? But between those two, so, you know, saying that, I'm not saying that Bayless is, like, somehow a better motorcycle racer than Valentino Rossi or anything. They're both spectacular, and it's very hard. You're somewhat judging apples and oranges, really. And we have seen, like you said, Rossi and Bayless in the same series. But again, not on the same equipment. I mean, what would be a fair is fair being also relative, but what would be the sort of most accurate of who is simply the better racer is put them both on unfamiliar machinery that's identical, kind of a spec race where they're out there. But even then, do you put them out, just those two guys on the track on the same time riding, BMWs with Continental tires or something to sort of, you know, to try to mix it up as much as possible so that nothing is familiar for these guys. Is it just those two? Or do you have a few other, you know, world-class riders out there as well? So that way some of the advantages that Rossi has, like Rossi's stalking and hunting skills, which we've talked about endlessly here, are, you know, supernatural. Whereas I don't think that Bayless has that. And, you know, it's hard to get an exact answer on that. But I'm saying that in this particular race, as it's outlined here, you know, going to Qatar, Rossi on an R1, Bayless on a Ducati, then I would go with, my money would be on Bayless.
Yeah, and I mean, to talk a little bit about Bayless, I know this is a MotoGP show, but, you know, you were saying how you wouldn't put Bayless on the same level as Rossi, and I agree, but just to kind of give Bayless his due, you know, he some stats here for you. You know, he had, I think, like 152 World Superbike races, and he finished on the podium, I think, in like 94 of those races. So, you know, he's finishing on the podium in two out of the three races he enters.
Right.
He won, I think, like 52 of those races. So he's winning, you know, every third race. So I think people arguably can say he's one of the best, you know, world superbike racers of all time.
Oh yeah.
And he did have his last hurrah, which I was so happy for when he got his win on the Ducati and MotoGP when he had that one last, you know, one-off ride, and he had pole position. He led every lap, and he won the race. And so, you know, he did win some races in MotoGP. So, you know, it would be interesting. And, I'm a big fan. It would be interesting to see how those guys race. But, like I said in the beginning, I'm not sure either one of them would race. I mean, in World Superbike, there's several guys out there that can really throw down. And so it would be a really fun race to watch.
Sure. Yeah, super exciting, super interesting, if nothing else. And, I mean, yeah, that's the thing, is even if the other guys are only, and not to detract from the other guy's skill, but if they're only out there effectively as spoilers, you know, it's still, then that's kind of the whole thing of how do you judge this? How do you have this thing? And one of the comparisons that's made in this article, in Dennis Noyes' article on Speed, he's talking about the Muhammad Ali George Foreman rumble in the jungle in 1974, which basically is where he gets his cool name of Duel in the Desert. It's not like that though, you know, because the rumble in the jungle, you've got two world class boxers, right? And other than the, okay, they've got their seconds in their corner and that can have a huge influence on the fight and this and that, but it's basically, it's those two guys and that's it, right? Whereas with motorcycle racing, it is, I think it's more of a team sport and there's more than two guys out there on the track. So it's really difficult to quantify in that easy pigeonholed sort of way.
And, right.
Right. But in any case, it would be super cool to watch. and if they do, if it does happen, you know, is it going to be on Speed TV? Or, you know, is the average American, cable or satellite TV subscriber going to be able to see this? I don't know. You know, who knows? This is something where, you know, that in fact, this is mentioned in the article. You know, what all of a sudden are the TV rights going to be worth for that?
Yeah, and my gut feeling is we'll never see it happen, but I certainly would like to, and I certainly hope they put it on TV for everybody to watch. And
Right. Yeah, I think you probably got more of a chance of seeing Michael Schumacher racing Max Biaggi in World Superbike, which could very well happen. or interestingly enough, how about Bayless and Rossi in rally cars? Yeah, something like that. But
that would be good, too.
Yeah, because, you know, Bayless, there was some rumors kicking around, and I'm not sure where they got squashed or whatever, but, you know, talking about him going to, like, the Australian, what do they call that series with the big Holdens, the Australian V8 supercars or whatever.
Right.
That kind of thing, which I don't think he's planning on doing, but it was still interesting. So, yeah.
I watched those guys on a bicycle race.
Oh, yeah, that would actually be kind of cool, too. Rossi shows him a wheel, you know. That would be good fun. And then throw Lance Armstrong in the mix to have, like, you know, to see what happens then. But, so, all right, so there's that news story. And I'm going to put links, of course, on all of these stories up on the MotoGPOD.com website. Provided, of course, that I remember to do that, but I'm going to make a note, put links. And the next last little bit that I had of stuff that I kind of wanted to cover and mention in this and that, and this was actually, I read the sort of digest version on Kropotkin Thinks at MotoGPMatters.com, where he sort of gave me the quickie 3-paragraph version that's easy to read real quick, is another article from SpeedTV.com, also with Dennis Noyes, an interview with Carmelo Espeleta. And as you all know, Carmelo Espeleta is the boss of Dorna, and effectively that makes him pretty much the one most powerful guy in MotoGP of sort of determining what's going to happen. And rightly or wrongly, you know, he's blamed for the problems that MotoGP has, or he is credited for the success that MotoGP has. But gist of it, that in that MotoGP Matters piece by Kropotkin, is that Espeleta says the electronics are not to blame for the somewhat processional racing that we have seen in some of the MotoGP races this year. And I don't know, what do you, because you read some of that, both you and I, we discussed this a little bit. What do you think on that one, Darren?
Well, I kind of agree. I don't think the electronics are to blame. I mean, the motorcycle still needs to be ridden. The thing about MotoGP is it's just there's not as many riders on the track. There's 19 guys out in the race. And, you know, if you are at the track and you're watching the races, you'll see battles for, you know, fifth place and battles for ninth place. And, you know, there's battles all the way down the line. But when you just have a certain number of riders and, the quality of riders that they have out there and the quality of bikes that are out there, you're just going to have people that run faster times. I mean, most races I've seen, if I include every race I've ever seen, including club races, there's usually somebody out there that runs a little bit faster than everybody else. And go figure, he pulls away a little bit every lap. And so the guy that wins by, you know, a reasonable amount of time. It's usually rare that you get people who are, you know, very evenly matched, and they're the fastest two guys out on the track. You know, I think we were spoiled with Rossi because for the longest time he was able to just kind of battle at will, and he knew he could win the race at any point. And he likes to race, and he likes to make a show of it. And those were good years. Those were fun races to watch. But I think now, you know, he knows he's got a battle on his hands with Stoner and Pedrosa, and he can't afford to give them an inch. If he can get out in front, or if he can, you know, wait for a little bit, but once he passes, he needs to get away. And that's what happened this year. Maybe it'll be a little bit different next year. Maybe we'll see if he doesn't feel the pressure to win the championship. I think this year he really wanted to win the championship more than to, you know, provide a good show. And so maybe next year he'll be like, well, you know, I'm gonna have some fun again, and maybe there'll be some close races. But I don't think it's the electronics to blame. You know, sure, I think with the bigger motors, the 990s, they could be ridden differently. You could, you know, outbreak somebody into the corner and just kind of block their pass and then shoot out of it because you had so much power. With the 800s, you really need to carry your corner speed, and if you try to do that, outbreak somebody in the corner, you're going to mess up your corner speed so much that the third-place guy is going to pass both of you. So, you know, you have to ride them a little bit differently. But, you know, I think it's just what it is, and I don't think electronics is really the cause of all of the professional racing.
Right. And I tend to agree, and another topic that I've visited more than once in the past is this, I don't know, maybe it's misguided, maybe it's silly thinking of me, whatever, but that I do think that MotoGP is a prototype series, and that MotoGP is sort of payback to society, if you will, for, you know, for burning a lot of oil and gas and causing pollution and noise and this and that, that their payback should be that they develop things that improve the motorcycles that you and I buy, which includes tires and electronics. And so while I don't necessarily want to see some robot motorcycle racing around with effectively a guy on it that's not doing anything, and I don't think that's where we're at, and I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that I don't want to see that, but that I do think that developing the electronics and it's just one more thing that the factory and the team and the rider can use to their benefit to beat all the other guys. And, you know, if you want to say, you know, no, we're not going to have electronics, it's got to be the rider and only the rider and this and that and the other, then let's go back. And I've said this one before too. Let's go back to the old days with drum brakes and, you know, that don't slow the motorcycle down and, and, you know, crappy tires and all that. And yeah, you'll see that, you know, this is going to separate the men from the boys, but that's not what I want to see. You know, I don't want to see Deathmatch 2000. I want to see, you know, the best guys right now of the time taking advantage of the equipment that they have and going out there and battling head to head. So that means that you cannot make comparisons of, like, is Giacomo Agostini a better or lesser racer than is Valentino Rossi? Those comparisons are apples and oranges because they're riding different machines and in different venues as well. You know, the safety and the way that a racetrack now is laid out with, you know, big runoff areas and air fencing and all these sorts of things that, you know, back in the day, right, you know, you just close off the road and go. And, you know, but unfortunately also that means that guys tended to crash and die. So we've kind of moved on to a different level of safety and all of that. And it's just, it's the way it is. It's progress. Time marches on. But, you know, I want to see, you know, let's find right now this year the best, you know, 18, 19, 20, you know, maybe however many guys they can get, however many motorcycles they can get, see the best ones in the world, go out there on roughly equal-ish machinery and see, you know, what happens.
I agree. I mean, that's what MotoGP is. I know, I think I differ a little bit from you and Jules as far as the tire goes. But, you know, that's a different subject altogether. We don't need to get into that tonight.
No, yeah, we've done the tire thing to death so many times. And I, you know, but yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I think it's their sort of duty to society. And hey, if they can accomplish that when only with only one tire supplier, well, okay, that's good too. It's just, I don't know.
Right.
You know, we'll see. And you got to admit, I think World Superbike has improved from the fact that they have everybody's on Pirellis. It did help.
And I think, you know, I don't think it's been just that move that has helped World Superbike. I mean, back before when they had, you know, any tire you wanted, Michelin, I think, was dominant. And I think Dunlop, I don't even know if it was Michelin, Bridgestone, perhaps. But Michelin tires were the tires to have back in the 90s on World Superbike. And they changed that rule, but they also changed the rules around a little bit to help out the inline fours. And
right.
So they increased the cylinders to, you know, 1,000 cc's. All the manufacturers had 1,000 cc bikes at that time. So Honda got in the game, Yamaha got in the game. You know, they were able to kind of equalize everything out. It took them a few years because they had some, you know, they had a year or two where they had to kind of, they had restrictions on the four cylinders. But, you know, they've kind of gotten past that. And it's really good racing now, and you know, tires I think made it a little bit of a difference. But I think they made several changes that have, you know, really helped out.
Yeah, they did kind of shotgun out a few changes because I mean, back in a few years ago, it wasn't too long ago, the World Superbike was derogatorily called, you know, the Ducati Cup and all of that. And yeah, they did. There was some changes that were made, and so it is a little bit hard to say exactly what happened. And also, like, as far as a single tire manufacturer rule is concerned, in effect, that's what we've been seeing in AMA. When is the last time that anybody who was not on Dunlops in AMA did all that well? You know what I mean? As a whole season, you know, not just a one-off race or here's an unusual one or it was raining or it was this track or that track or whatever, but you know, the entire season. I mean, Dunlops have dominated, and
right.
It's just, and the same in the 250 cc's and the 125s. Dunlops are the only choice to have.
And that was the way in MotoGP for the longest time. It was Michelin,
right? Exactly. And yeah, and you know, and there's something to be said about the whole, you know, as soon as Michelin starts having competition, they, you know, want to clean up their toys and go home. And you know, maybe there's something
all right,
to that.
Enough now. Let it go.
I can't. It's tires. but you're right. Yes, let it go. And in fact, on that, we said this was going to be a short call, and we're already pegging around the 50-plus-odd minute mark. So,
and I guess this is the Christmas MotoGP.
Yes, indeed it is.
Podcast. Christmas and New Year's Eve, I guess. New Year's Day.
Right. We might have a special coming down the pipe from Jules. We don't know yet one way or the other, but otherwise our next regularly scheduled show that I know is going to happen is not until January 9th. So it is the Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to everybody, and to you, Darren, of course, as well. I hope that you and Sharon both have a wonderful Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you very much, Bob, and the same back to you. I'm not sure who you're going to be going out with on Christmas or New Year's Eve, but wish her well.
Wow. I'm not sure how to take that, Darren.
I was just kind of flipping through all of the mental images of recent get-togethers and thinking, I don't know if I know names or not. But
okay, well, in any event, wow. So I'm done. I've got nothing now. I'm spent. So. It was great talking. It was always good having you on the show, Darren. It's always nice to be able to bounce things off you and get your perspective and stuff. So thanks very much for being on the show. And we're going to have to do it again very, very soon. And
right. And if anybody has any questions, email them to Bob and
yeah,
maybe we'll talk about it.
Yeah, definitely. We'll get, we'll start having, you know, Darren kind of involved in the email answering thing because I've been trying to keep up. I know there's a couple that have fallen through the cracks with the email, but yeah, always send it to bob@motogpod.com, and I will probably sit Darren up with an address as well, and so that way you can just direct them to straight to him. But in the meantime, send it to me, and if it's anything that sort of I think, you know, Darren will want to answer, we'll get him involved and all of that. So right on. Thanks a lot, Darren, and we will talk to you again real soon.
Talk to you later, Bob.
Bye. And that's going to do it for today's show. Thanks again to Darren. Always a pleasure to have you on the phone. I really enjoyed talking with you. I had a lot of fun on that. And I hope that you all out there had as much fun listening to that call as Darren and I had making that call. So let's see. Like I said, no more show until January 9th. We're going to take a couple of weeks off here for the holidays and all of that. So happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, Merry Christmas, whatever it is that around this time of year that is your particular holiday. And if I missed yours, I do apologize to put it down to ignorance. Other than that, let's see. Congratulations again to the contest winners. Thank you to everybody for entering that contest. I really, really do appreciate it. Thank you very much to MotoGP Matters for having that and allowing us to give away those five calendars. All that's good fun. Always like seeing, you know, the emails. Kind of gives me a judge of how many people are actually listening out there. And the response was very, very good. So, I wish that we could have given away more than five, but whatever. We gave away five, and congratulations to those guys. Let's see. I think that's about it. I probably should stop talking right now. And so let's say until January 9th. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Do keep it safe out there. I know the weather up here is frightful, and you got to be careful out there if you're riding and all of that. And if you are riding, more power to you, because it's darn cold. So until January 9th, keep the shiny side up and the rubber side down, and we will talk to you later. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.